with BookBeats. I'm Don Swain. The music of Aaron Copland, who will be 90 years old this year. The second volume of Copland's autobiography, Copland Since 1943, is a companion piece to an earlier volume. The books began as an oral history conducted by Vivian Perlis, who notes that Aaron Copland was born in Brooklyn, where his family ran a department store.
The family lived above and to the side of the store, and Copland grew up in the business world and with very little contact with the music world or, in fact, the art world.
Early on, Copland displayed a musical talent.
As a teenager, he crossed the Brooklyn Bridge to Manhattan and took lessons with a famous teacher in Manhattan, Reuben Goldmark.
At the age of 20, Aaron Copland was off to Paris. There he studied music under Nadia Boulanger.
He didn't know how to tell people, the folks back at home, because he could think of not one single famous composer who had ever studied with a woman. And his way of handling that, since the family was very practical-minded, was that it would cost a little less.
Back in the U.S. in 1924, Aaron Copland composed his first major work, a symphony for organ and orchestra. Perla says the critics blasted Copland's early work because it was so heavily influenced by jazz.
The idea of jazz in the concert hall, especially in Boston, was shocking.
But Copland survived the critics, as we read in Copland Since 1943 by Aaron Copland and Vivian Perlis, published by St. Martin's Press. Don Swain, News 88. With BookBeat, I'm Don Swain. With BookBeat, I'm Don Swain. Few composers are more American in their music than Aaron Copland.
He made that decision that he wanted to try to find an American sound, and the easiest, fastest way to do that at first was jazz-oriented works.
That's Vivian Perlis, who worked with Aaron Copland on two books of autobiography, the second volume of which covers the years since 1943. By that year, Copland had successfully scored two movies, Of Mice and Men and Our Town. And was writing the music for a film called North Star, which glorified America's wartime ally, the USSR.
Later in the 40s, Copland did what is perhaps his most well-known score, and that is The Heiress, well-known because he won an Oscar for that.
Also in the 40s, Copland wrote a fanfare, which became one of his best-known works.
Think of the name. He had music for soldiers and sailors, fanfare for the armed forces, fanfare for Lidice, the little town in Czechoslovakia, the fanfare for this and that. And some of those names are on his scores, sketches of his score. It's hard for us to think of that music as anything but fanfare for the common man.
Which later became part of the final movement of Copland's Third Symphony. The Aaron Copland story is told in Copland Since 1943, published by St. Martin's Press. The first volume is now a trade paperback. Don Swain, News 88. With BookBeat, I'm Don Swain. With BookBeat, I'm Don Swain. In Aaron Copland's concluding work of autobiography, Copland Since 1943, the great composer shatters a few myths about his best-known work, Appalachian Spring. Vivian Perlis, who co-wrote the book, says Copland was commissioned to compose a ballet for the dancer Martha Graham in 1944. Copland had only an outline of what Graham wanted and no firm title. Here's Perlis.
He said to Martha Graham, "What have you decided to call this piece?" He had named it Ballet for Martha. And she said, "Appalachian Spring." And he said, "Oh, how nice. Where did you get that title?" And she said, "Well, it is from a poem from Hart Crane." And he said, "Does it have anything to do with your ballet?" And she said, "No, I just like the sound of it."
Fans often told Copland how they could feel springtime in the music, but Vivian Perlis says Martha Graham's title, Appalachian Spring, comes from a line about a waterfall. Perlis, a music historian at Yale, worked with Copland on the autobiography for more than 10 years and had full access to the composer's files.
He saved everything. It's all going to the Library of Congress so that future biographers and historians will have use of this very rich material.
Despite their labor, Perlis and Aaron Copland found time to laugh.
There would always be social time involved with, you know, a few hours of work and then a wonderful break for always a delightful lunch, and other people would come to visit, and there would be stories about the music world and gossip about music people.
Copland Since 1943 was published by St. Martin's Press. Don Swain, News 88. With BookBeat, I'm Don Swain. With Bookbeat, I'm Don Swain. The 1950s were traumatic years for composer Aaron Copland. Communists seemed to be hiding under every bed, and Senator Joseph McCarthy summoned Copland to Washington with the hope of linking the composer to the Communist Party. Copland had some inkling the boom was about to fall because his patriotic work, Lincoln Portrait, was withdrawn from the Eisenhower inauguration in 1952.
As I would not be a slave, so I would not be a master.
Vivian Perlis is co-author of Copland's autobiography.
Not only was he not a communist, he was a very apolitical figure. He had very little interest in politics.
But Copland had many friends, intellectuals, and artists who were part of the left.
The feeling was that McCarthy was after big names, and Copland was a big name in music.
Life magazine joined the fray by publishing a series of photographs of people the magazine described as dupes and fellow travelers.
Somebody did point out at the time that the people that Life magazine called dupes and fellow travelers were the cream of American arts and letters.
Copland's photograph was between those of Leonard Bernstein and Clifford Odets. Copland Since 1943 by Aaron Copland and Vivian Perlis was published by St. Martin's Press. A companion volume, Copland 1900 through 1942, is now in paperback. Don Swaim, News 88. With BookBeat, I'm Don Swaim. The two volumes of Aaron Copland's autobiography, the most recent, Copland Since 1943, are packed with facts about the composer's music, travels, and acquaintances. But Copland shies away from any details about his personal life. Here's co-author Vivian Perlis.
He was reticent about his personal life, and it's one of the reasons that I tried to include many interviews with people who could perhaps address some of these things a little more directly.
In the book, composer Ned Roram raises questions about Copland's sexuality and about a strange, baffling young man named Victor Kraft, with whom Copland had a long-time relationship.
He would not have made direct statements about sex or sexuality and so forth, but nor would he have hidden the fact that Victor Kraft was his closest, his intimate friend, and that they lived together, and that, in fact, he is a homosexual.
When Victor Kraft dies, Copland mentions it in less than a paragraph. When Copland's brother commits suicide, the composer refers to it in three sentences. Still, Vivian Perlis says, Copland put no limits on her as she worked to shape the autobiography.
He's a very optimistic person, not wanting to dwell on anything that was unpleasant, not wanting to hide it, but feeling, well, this isn't musical material.
Aaron Copland, America's best-known living composer, will be 90 in November. St. Martin's Press published both volumes of Copland's autobiography, the latest, Copland Since 1943. Don Swaim, News 88. Aaron Copland, America's best-known living composer, will be 90 in November. St. Martin's Press published both volumes of Copland's autobiography, the latest, Copland Since 1943. With BookBeat, I'm Don Swaim.